We're good?
Oh, yeah, man. How you be, man?
Not great at the moment.
What's wrong?
But today was rough, man.
Yeah?
Like, fucking work. Like, I've worked till... Like, yesterday I worked till 8. Like, the day before I worked till, like, 7:30. And today I had to work late. And it's just, like, fucking... It's draining.
Bro, let's start there because like one of my first fucking topics. Oh, it's fucking Twostonians. What's up,
y'all? Twostonians
here. We're here. We're back. So we're grab bagging it today, which is sort of I think our new default. I think I like the grab bag personally. And you talk about being tired and stuff. Yeah. My first topic is bodies are gross. Because let me tell you,
human bodies.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Specifically mine. So let me tell you about the last 2 weeks. All right. Okay. It's going to get real gnarly in here. So, like, for everybody out there, like, explicit gross body warnings. Okay. So here's what happened for me. Because I'm with you. Like, I've been overworked. Yeah. Like, as you know, this has been a big semester for me at work. And I was doing some side projects because I figured I wasn't busy enough, I guess.
Yeah.
And it all finally finished, but it all culminated with, like, 2 weeks back. I got a flu shot, and then, like, I was feeling like I had that sort of, like, baby flu from it.
No.
Yeah.
You're not one of the people, are you?
What, one of what people?
Who got insulin instead of a flu shot.
Oh, fuck. I don't know.
Shit. Yeah, there was an outbreak in the Northeast. Where some people went in to get flu shots and they accidentally were given insulin.
What?
Yeah.
What the fuck? This don't explain a lot.
Holy shit.
Insulin, fucking flu shot. We're on Google now.
We're both, yeah.
Oh, no, sorry.
Oklahoma, okay. Sorry.
Nah, I see, I believe that would happen in Oklahoma. They're not reading labels there.
No. All right, my bad.
All right, no, man. Because it would explain a lot. Well, what happened is they get the baby flu, right? And then, like, I'm so overworked. I'm so exhausted. I haven't taken a day off in, like, 6 weeks or seven weeks. And, like, not to say, to be fair, I've worked from home, but I've still worked every day. Like, I haven't had a day that I did not work since, like, September.
Yeah.
And, like, early September. And... then, so I, like, Friday before work, I've been feeling pretty sick. I didn't know if I was going to be able to make it. And I was like, I'll see how I feel in the morning. And I almost passed out in the shower. So I was like, okay.
Oh,
yeah, so I was like, all right, class is off. I have to take a day. It ended up being the same weekend that my sister was visiting my wife. Not me. I got to see my sister. But they went off for the weekend, like, to, like, out of town together. Like, okay. I just got to see her, you know.
Yeah.
But, so it sort of worked out for that reason. I got to rest. But then, the accumulation of the semester, stress, all the bad eating I've been doing, because it's like, you know how you get?
Oh, yeah.
Here's what's going to get real gross, people. If you want to fast forward, like, 3 minutes, now's the time. So, fucking, I hope in 3 minutes it's exactly the grossest part. That'd be fucking
yeah.
So, all right, so I get this fucking crazy constipation, Joe, like, crazy.
Crazy,
painful. Like, you feel the fucking bowling ball in your gut. You know? And finally, I'm able to, you know, go. But I strain so hard that I bust a fucking blood vessel in my butthole.
Oh, my God.
This is last week. And I get a blood clot underneath my, like, the skin of my butthole. So it just hurts. Like a little rock underneath your fucking butt. Right?
Oh, okay.
This is called.
We're starting here. This is where we're starting the podcast.
We're going all in. I want to set up fucking shitty buttholes for when I'm talking about Scorsese, the NFL, and Louis C.K.
Okay.
So I fucking so I fucking have this like just hard, angry lump in my ass, and it's fucking sending pain up my tailbone, which is setting off my back spasms.
Oh my
god! Yeah, it's just the worst. It's just the fucking worst. And and what I found out, like just online research, is what I had is called a thrombosed hemorrhoid, so like a like a blood clot basically that's clogging up your butthole vein, you know, and it just hurts, and it just says all you can do is really wait it out. Yeah. Unless it gets so infected or gross, they have to cut it out. But that's pretty rare.
Okay.
Right? Or so I thought. I got real close to this. So what happens is it fucking gets infected, and I develop essentially over the course of like 48 hours, like a huge like boil like on the most sensitive part of my body. And it's just the most painful shit ever. I thought I was growing like a second nutsack. I made out of pus. Like it was so hurt so much. And I finally and I had called out of work again, a second Friday in a row.
Yeah.
And I was like, they might have to go cut this thing out of me. I don't know what's going to happen. So I fucking went to the emergency room or urgent care, whatever. Yeah. And they were like, they saw my chart. And like, I want you to picture the most like New England accent, some lady who just like, is fucking already over it at 9:30 in the morning on a Friday. She's just like, she's going to the Cape this weekend. She's like, I'm just trying to get to Saturday, you know? And comes in, like, reading my chart, like, hemorrhoids, you don't gotta come in for a hemorrhoid. And I'm like, just look at it, because, like, this is not normal, I can tell. And she fucking, so I just bend over, and she fucking just looks at my ass, and she's like, and she goes, her demeanor changes. She's like, oh, you poor thing. And was just like, all of a sudden, like, super empathic and trying to help me.
Yeah. You know? Yeah.
And, like...
Weird
and,
flex, but cool.
Yeah, yeah. And she couldn't do anything about it, so she gave me some topical cream, and they're like, here's a referral to a surgeon, and call your medical doctor and tell them, ask them what they think. I don't suspect you need surgery, but if it gets any worse, maybe, so, like...
It's in the realm of surgery. Like, it's in the realm. That's where you're at, yeah.
And then we go home, and I'm just like, I've been like for 48 hours now, just like a low hum of pain that doesn't end. I, at one point, like before I went to emergency care, I tried to pop it myself, and it wouldn't pop. Like I had a needle. I was desperate.
Oh, no.
I was desperate.
That could have, then it could have really had an infection, like, or you could have had a worse infection. That was not smart, man. I'm glad that didn't happen.
Worth the risk. Yeah.
Oh my God.
And then, so anyway, so then like we get the stuff, the cream or whatever, and this is Friday now, like a week ago. And and sidebar, like shouts to my wonderful wife who all week was just peering into my butthole with no judgments, just like, all right, let's see what's going on in here. Just like, and I was just like, get back there. Get back there, man. Tell me what's up, because it don't feel right, you know? And which is important for this story.
Yeah.
So then we get home and I put the shit on, and I'm like, whoa, this stuff works. I feel better already. But then I realized like draining down my leg is that the thing burst. Yeah. Okay. And, dude, you know what came out? Baby spiders. Just a fucking ton of baby spiders. And I was like, what the fuck? And then I fucking yelled at the spiders because for a second I realized, like, these are, like, my babies.
Uh-huh.
Right? And, like, most of them just fucking scattered. But, like, five of them looked back and just sort of, like, gave me a knowing look and were like, thank you. And then they left and rejoined their family. That's obviously not true. It was It was just stinky blood and pus just fucking running down my leg. And my wife had to like catch it, like the cleanest. It wouldn't hit the ground. Like she cleaned it up. Oh. And but then the craziest thing happened. 10 minutes later, like I was fine. Like I was completely fine. Everything came out. Like all the gross just came out all at once. I guess the fucking blood clot came with it. I don't know. But And then I've been like, I have this like medicines I have to take, and I'm like, you know, tender for like a week. But like, bro, bodies are gross.
Bodies like, are very gross.
Yeah.
Especially your body.
Especially my body. Yeah. So life's particularly gross. For a body that is as attractive as mine, it's surprisingly, it's surprisingly gnarly. I had legitimate butt rot this week.
Mm-hmm. Oh, man. That's very unfortunate. I'm sorry you had to go through that. That sounds terrible.
I weirdly am glad because
so bad.
It was those 48 hours where I just had that sort of like extra, what I was calling my butt sack.
Yeah.
It was fucking worst. It was the worst. Like, it wasn't the worst pain I've ever felt because I've broken bones and I've had like back spasms my whole life, but it hurt a lot. But it hurt for 48 hours with no respite. There's no way you can sit or lie down. It gets you, you feel it in your sleep.
There's like, no way to be comfortable, like, at
then,
all.
And then because of all the pus, you're essentially starting to get a bacterial infection, fever. Like, it's just crazy. Just 48 hours of constant descent, and then all of a sudden it's gone. Like, an exorcism happened.
Wow.
It was crazy. I was better in, like, 15 minutes. Like, it had never happened.
Yeah. Have you ridden a bike since?
No. I don't even care for sitting down.
that's terrible, man. I'm sorry. Oh, that's awful.
Yeah, but it's
That's pretty fucking gross.
Yeah, but it's also pretty funny. That spider bit's pretty good, right?
The spider bit, no, that was pretty good. Yeah. That was pretty good. You could have kept that going, like, no, like, it turns out a spider bit me, and, you know, like, or a spider laid its eggs inside of my anus, or, you know, you could have really went with
that. I had
that.
This whole bit worked out to some of my students, and I told them when they asked them why I was gone, because they care, you know, I was like, this is really gross. Do you want to hear it? And they all said no. Like, all three classes. And I was like, man, I had this whole spider baby fucking shit prepped, and you guys
good
didn't.
For them. Yeah, good know, for right? them.
I think they've also learned, like, what I'm like.
Yeah.
You so give me permission. If you give me permission, like, I'm leaning into this story.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, they know. They know who they're dealing with.
Good Lord, Jorge.
Yeah, bro. I don't know, man. Eat your fiber.
So wait, is this correlated to the flu shot in any way, or you just got a flu shot and then this happened?
I got a flu shot and then this happened. I have no idea.
Okay.
My only theory is that because I got that baby flu that was passed out, it somehow lent itself to my constipation because it was clearly stress the patient.
Yeah.
And it maybe just was like, it might have been like the match that lit the fire, you know?
Oh, man. That's rough.
Bro, you have no idea. It was so bad.
That's rough, man. That is rough. That's, oh.
Where do we go from here, Joe?
I don't know, man. Shit. Shit. Like.
Shit is right.
Yeah.
Well, things change fast. This too shall pass. Better carve it on your forehead or tattoo it on your ass. Because who can tell? When the clock strikes 12, if today's become tomorrow, it's all just gone to hell. My friend makes rings. She swirls and sings. She's a mystic in the sense that she's still mystified by things, but scared to ask. How can nothing seem to last? It's like a cancer in your body. It all just goes too fast.
Oh, man.
Yeah, bro.
Yeah.
So, what do you got on your list? What are we talking about?
Oh, my God. See, like, fucking, how do I follow that? I was just going to say, like, do we want to talk Rockets?
Yeah, fuck it. Why not?
Yeah. But I do have one little tidbit that, like, just happened. Portland just signed Carmelo.
What? Yeah. Desperate. God damn it. I should have stuck with them not making the playoffs. Why did I have to shit on L.A.? Like, God damn it. Fucking Blake's fault somehow.
I feel also sort of responsible because I was also with you. I'm like, I'll talk to you back into Portland. I'm like, trust them. They'll make it.
No, they're probably not. God damn it. Fucking Portland found a way to stick it to me again when I finally came and was like, fine, Portland's legitimate basketball team. They fucking do this. Like, somehow they've done this despite me specifically.
Phoenix, though. Phoenix might make the playoffs.
Fucking Phoenix are great.
They look really good. They finally have a competent coach.
You know, they have a competent coach, and they have a pocket point guard, so Devin Booker can be Devin Booker.
Yep. Yeah.
Here's the thing.
They had a really good offseason. Like, I know this is offseason.
This is one of those things people can just say. You can find my tweets. When Ricky Rubio did not go to Utah, when they moved on, that day I tweeted at him, Ricky Rubio, you're going to love Phoenix. That day. Because I was like, he's the perfect fit in Phoenix. And then I thought, he's just going to make them competent. And I thought for a while, actually, about picking them as a dark horse, but I didn't because the West is so stacked, and I talked myself out of it.
Yeah. Although the West might not be as stacked as we thought it was. looking at it now, like injuries have really played a huge factor in that.
Injuries and I think, like I said last time, like the West isn't as competitive, but it's not as great as it was.
No. Your whole that so we're recording this. Rockets and the Clippers played last night.
Fuck Tony Brothers.
Tony Brothers really fucked that game up. But the bigger thing is that the stop, like, thinking back to the Rockets last year and how they played in big game situations, especially that playoff series, the intensity was different, but just like this, like the intelligence on the court was different. Like, it's like everybody's way looser now. I think it's because there's no big bad Warriors around where you have to be perfect. Right. Everybody's kind of relaxed now, and so everybody's game is super relaxed now. Everybody's just like, oh man, like, yeah, there's no Warriors now. There's no team that's clearly that. Like, you think you can beat anybody.
Right.
And you probably can't.
Right. Yeah, it's pretty even. As far as the game last night, like, I even though the both teams are incomplete, no Paul George, no Daniel House, no Eric Gordon, and we haven't had word on Capella. It looked like he had a concussion, so my guess is
he's missing the next game. For sure.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. Probably a week. He'll probably be out. Hopefully, it's not more than a week. Because he's having a great season. I think in terms of what you just said, that sort of that mental block is gone. I haven't seen it affect anybody more than Capella.
Yeah.
Like, I feel like he's comfortable in just doing the three things he has to do: rim defense, rebounding, and high percentage shots at the rim. And he's doing all three really well.
And he's got two great passers still. Yeah. But now he has a guy who's going to get him the ball quicker and, like, closer to the rim. Like, Russ gets him the best shots. And then he also has the prototype to give him tips. He's got Tyson Chandler there. Like, he might be worth it just to have him there giving Capella advice.
Man, bro, I have been coveting Tyson Chandler my whole life, and he's, like, 42, and I'm like, fuck it. I'm buying a Tyson Chandler jersey more than, like, I have loved Tyson Chandler forever.
Yeah.
I just like his game. Like, he plays within himself. He is, like you said, the prototype, like, of the modern center. I love fucking Tyson Chandler.
Yeah.
He's the fucking best. I love his fucking 40-year-old man beard. Like...
Hey, I like that he can still do reverse alley-oop dunk.
Yeah. Like, I like that. Crazy. I like that one of the fucking youngins he's playing against, I don't know, they could be his kid. He doesn't know that they're not.
It might be.
He's definitely going to sun those motherfuckers. But the defense was locked in. Harden was, I think... a surprise. I won't call him so far as a revelation. It's an overused fucking term in basketball. But, like, he can really guard Kawhi. And when you look at the highlights, I watched again. Like, I was like, was that real?
Or no, it was real.
Off night? Some shots Kawhi just missed. But some shots he altered. Mm-hmm. Because Kawhi kind of plays bully ball. And you're not going to bully Harden. He's just too stout.
Especially this new, bigger version of Harden.
Yeah, dude. He looks fucking jacked. Like, holy shit. He's fucking
huge, man.
Yeah, dude. He's a fucking monster. Like, God dang. Like, yeah, exactly. So you're not going to push him around. So, and Harden, like, for all this fucking talk about he doesn't play defense, it's because he ball watches and his man just runs around free. Like,
he doesn't help defend well. He post defends and one-on-one defends. Mediocre.
I would say this instead. I would say that he's actually a good to excellent on the ball defender.
Yeah.
And terrible at every other kind of defense.
Post defense, he's good.
But that's on the ball.
That's on the ball, yeah.
Yeah. Like, on the ball, he's actually, like, pretty good. Like, if you get past him, he'll push you into the defense. He's not going to just, whoops, you got past me. Like, it's just the.
He's not giving you a break.
Right.
You know?
Not giving you a break. You're going to have to play him.
Yeah.
He plays competent to excellent defense on the ball. Off the ball, he's just like one of the worst I've fucking ever seen. He's
so bad.
He's so bad.
But so is Russ.
But Russ is ball chasing. That's why. You can just get Russ to run around. Like, I love Russ. Actually, I love Russ now.
My favorite Rocket. It happened immediately. Like, that guy, it's hard not to love that guy.
Yeah, you know, I own a Westbrook jersey. I own a Thunder Westbrook jersey.
I've slandered the hell out of that man's name for years.
I never did. I was always pissed. I'm on record as being like, the triple-double is overrated, is what I've learned from Russell Westbrook doing so many of them. However, I've always been like, but he's fun to watch. I don't know if I want him on my team, but I love when he's in a game. Like,
to be fair, he's also the only one who's done this, like the triple doubles. Like, it's weakened, but nobody else is doing it. It's like where people talk about Harden scoring. Like, just, you know, nobody else is doing it. Like, you say it's easy, but it's really only this guy who's doing it at this success.
Well, I never said it was easy. I just think it's kind of a statistical illusion. It's actually not.
Yeah, it really is. It is.
It's not this mythical thing.
You can pat it. You can pat the hell out of it.
Yeah, and I think a lot of...
He would get like 5 rebounds a night on free throws.
And I think a lot of people just aren't going for those. Yeah. It's not like 40-point games where you see players going for it. They're at 38 and they're going for it. Like, Russ would get to, like, 19, 8, and 8, and now he's going for a triple-double. Like, players don't go for triple-doubles. That stat hasn't been something that's worth pursuing until very recently.
Yeah.
But it's still awesome. Like, it's still awesome. Like, yeah. I love Russell Westbrook. But all of this, like, Pat Bev just runs around. He doesn't actually defend. Like, that's kind of you, buddy. Like, you kind of just run around.
Yeah, and then he was way wrong. Pat Bev really played amazing defense during that game.
Yeah, yeah.
And the stats proved that, like, Harden was, like, 0 for 6 when Beverly was the only defender on him. Like,
1 for 7.
He was 1 for 7.
Yeah.
Yeah, so, like, he did not have a good night when Beverly was allowed to foul him.
The defense looked awake and not lazy.
The stats say that our defense is good when Gordon's not in there.
Yeah, Gordon's just had a bad season.
Yeah.
Normally that's not true. Hopefully he goes back okay. But, like, here's the thing. Here is the Clippers. Every team's imperfect, right? That's the thing with the Warriors being gone. We haven't seen an imperfect team. We're not used to scouting good imperfect teams, right? We're just like, how do you not make a mistake long enough to beat this team that is just the closest thing to perfect we've ever seen, right? Because it's just an overload of talent.
Yeah.
And not perfect, invulnerable, I think is a better way of saying it. But the Clippers have, I don't want to call it a weakness, but a limitation. That team doesn't have much playmaking. They're banking on Kawhi sucking in the defense and them slowing you down enough that they don't have to score 120, that they can beat you with 100. That's what they did to the Warriors.
Mm-hmm.
And if you can outscore them, you can defend them. That's the thing. Can you outscore? That defense is going to be pretty stout. But, like, you don't have to fear their offense. You have to fear their defense. But their offense, it's kind of just okay.
Yeah. But they also, like, I think Paul George is going to come in. Because that guy averaged, what, almost 30 points a game last year. I think he'll come in and he'll fix a lot of that. Just because he can score. Like, he's a capable scorer.
I think he will make them the best version of what they are. But what they are is imperfect because they don't have playmaking. That's what I'm saying.
He's a playmaker. I think he gives them three solid playmakers. Kawhi, him, and Lou. And Lou creates for Montrez.
Yeah, see, I guess that's my point. All the things you call them, I don't call them creators, but they have shots they can create. Lou's a great example with Montrez. But he can't like set up anybody else. He has that one play. Kawhi kind of is, when it comes to playmaking, I think their playmakers are one-dimensional, but they do have more than one, so they're banking on that being enough. Well, we have basically two playmakers, but they're both excellent, but we only have two.
Yeah.
Right, and they have three okay ones, in terms of being playmakers.
I don't know. I think Kawhi's like, better than okay.
All right, I'll give you that. He's good. He's like, good, I think he's not elite.
I don't know about that. Like, the guy just won a finals. Like, Kawhi?
But you didn't do it with his passing. He did it with his clutch.
No, his passing, but they don't need him to... They don't really need that from him. They just need... Like, they got three guys who can always get buckets. You know what I mean?
But they also had Kyle Lowry.
Yeah.
Who can play make.
Yeah, but he didn't really have to. Or he couldn't. Like, he had terrible games in the playoffs.
He had great games in the finals.
In the finals, yeah. But, like, to get there, he had terrible games.
He had, I mean,
a lot,
he had
like Kawhi, a lot of Kawhi put like Kawhi is the reason they beat the Bucks.
He's Kawhi's the reason they won the trophy.
Well, yeah, but like really, the Warriors fell apart because like due to injuries. That wasn't a real series. The real series was how they just beat the Sixers. Great shot by Kawhi. And then they beat the Bucks. Like, they beat the Bucks, who were clearly, I think, the best team in the NBA last year.
I mean, yes. Yes, I agree. But the thing I'm saying is, if you look at Kawhi's championship teams, there's always a point guard that can distribute, and he doesn't have that. He had Kyle Lowry and Fred VanVleet, and when he was in San Antonio, he had Tony Parker. Like, he doesn't have a distributing point guard, and his offense, his team's offenses have always been good enough, right?
Yeah, but that's what I'm saying. I think Paul George is enough to correct that.
He could, no, he
because,
could be.
Because Paul George can create for his own shot. That's an extra 30 points you're adding.
He could almost. Be.
If he,
he
comes
could.
Back at that level, you know what I'm saying? I think he alleviates that. Like, they now they have an elite player.
I don't know if I call it. I don't know. I guess I don't know if I agree with that, because Paul George had his best season playing along a shot creator and being the number one guy, right? He's going to be the number two guy and not have a shot creator. I guess we'll see.
He's the number two guy.
You think he's over Kawhi?
I think Kawhi will step back and I think Kawhi is okay with stepping back and letting Paul get his shots during the middle of the game, and then Kawhi closes it.
That's true. That's true. I just think that, but here's what I think. I think teams that, this is arguably what happened to us last year, teams that don't have, who are committed to like shot creation, playmaking, ball distribution, and this team isn't going to be, because they're going to be limited to pick and rolls and kickouts, right? They're not going to be doing much beyond that. It makes it predictable and gives you a defensive strategy, and I think that's something that can be exploited, and I think we exploited it last night.
But yeah, I mean, yeah, but I don't know if last night is going to be relevant to the playoffs at all.
I don't know if it is either. Maybe it will. Yeah. Maybe it won't. Maybe we look back and look at oh, the Rockets were onto something early, or maybe we're like, oh,
no,
that was an anomaly.
I think foul trouble completely changed what that game was. Westbrook was a non-factor in the first half, and Beverly was a non-factor in the fourth quarter, where they're not going to have those kind of crazy fouls in the playoffs. Tony brothers are not.
Well, I mean, hey, fair, but I'm not going to just, like, discount it either, because other than that, I'm going on just, I don't know, looking at rosters. This is the first time they've played. I'm trying to...
Yeah,
this, I mean, I'm the king of the you can't make assumptions in November.
Yeah, I'm not. I think they're going to be a lot better once they get PG.
I'm just... Of course they will. 100%. Yeah. I'm just scouting them, and I don't see where their playmaking is going to come from, and that's the thing you have to target as something to wedge them, because you got to pick something. They're not...
I get that. I just think they're going to be able to put three guys who can score in a fourth quarter.
But none of those guys make anybody else better. I don't think Kawhi makes other people better, but he does get a lot out of them.
I mean, it might not matter.
It might not matter
because their defense is going to be one insane with that closing lineup, and that's even if they use Lou Williams, because they could go really small.
I think there's an off chance that the Clippers are weak inside. I don't trust Montrez and Zubac as defenders.
No, they still got a center to get.
The perimeter is going to be fucking insane, though. Yeah. That's going to be the craziest defensive lineup ever. Kawhi, Paul George, Pat Beverly, that's going to be nuts.
And there's only really one center you got to be afraid of in the conference.
In the conference? What center? What, Jokic?
Yeah, that's it, really.
But
that's it.
Still. Yeah. I mean, Denver, actually, when you put it that way, fucking... lines up nicely against them. Mm-hmm. This is going to be a fucking crazy season, man.
It is.
It's going to come down to like, oh man, as long as I don't draw that team, I'm good. Mm-hmm.
Super good. Super matchup based, very matchup based. And I think this trade deadline is going to be kind of crazy.
Like, I don't think Denver. I think Denver would love to try to play the Clippers. They have so many young guys to throw at it defensively, and so many young guys. They have fresh legs at all times. Like, they would, and then of course Jokic, because I think their weakness is in the lane. I don't think they have paint defense. I don't think they have any paint defense. But I also think they don't want to play us under no circumstances.
No.
They want to play us.
No, like, they don't.
So there you go. And until last night, I didn't want to play the Clippers. I still kind of don't, but I was like, well,
I'm not afraid. I agree with you in that I'm not afraid of them as a Rockets fan with this Rockets team, which I'm still not very certain about. But I also know this isn't the team we're going to have going into the playoffs. This is the year Morey's going to make a move. Maybe not a big move, but something definitely to improve this team.
I hate to say it, but what we need is Andre Iguodala. When I was watching,
absolutely.
I was watching Jermichael Green last night. I was like, God damn it, you'd make a perfect Rocket.
Yeah, he would have. He really would have. That's a tough one we didn't get last year. That was a tough one. But House looks great.
House looks great. Really great. Lots of chemistry with Russ.
Yeah, he's got... That's one thing. Like, there's good... The only two people who don't have chemistry is Harden and Russ. Russ has chemistry with everyone else. Harden has chemistry with everyone else. They don't have any chemistry. But Red94, I thought, made a good comment today where he was like, maybe Russ's value is really just that James Harden gets 5 plays off in a row and the offense doesn't suffer and he can rest and then he comes back 100%. Mm. Which is something Chris really couldn't do. Like, Chris could do it, but not like Russ can handle the load. And he's like, that might be why the trade's worth it. It's just James can take a break for a second.
Unless him and Gordon are both cold.
Yeah.
One of them needs to be shooting 40%. Just 40.
Russ, I don't think Russ has that in him.
Like 40% total, not from three.
Oh, okay. I don't know if Russ has that in him.
I'm aware. But if someone else is, he'll get him the ball.
Yeah. No.
Right? Yeah. I'm really interested in seeing a Russ, Gordon, Capella / Chandler lineup. What can that trio do? And then just give them, like, I don't know. What do you need at the moment? Thabo plays good defense, but he's kind of offensively nothing. Ben McLemore in that he's always almost good. Like, he's been almost good his whole career.
Almost, man. It just seems like it's there, and you're rooting for him. Like, you want, it's like, man, just fucking, come on.
When we got Ben McLemore, I was like, I forgot about Ben McLemore. Like, oh, yeah, fucking Ben McLemore. And then I see him, like, that's right, Ben McLemore, you're always almost good.
Yeah, because he's one of those guys you kind of hate playing. Like, when we used to play the Kings, it's like, fucking McLemore, man, he just keeps scoring on us, and then nothing.
you just caught him on his good night, right?
Yeah. Rivers, Jesus Christ, I love Austin Rivers. Love that guy.
I never thought. All right, I'm gonna tell you my secret, Joe. Yeah. I have been secretly standoffish about Austin Rivers being on our team this whole time. I've admitted to his usefulness. He earned his spot on the roster, but the whole time I was like, "Fucking Austin Rivers, though." Like, his face kind of pisses me off. You know, he's just got like, it's not even no problem that he's doing. He's just got one of those faces. You know.
Yeah.
And then last night when he was calling for the tea on his own dad, I was like, you won me over. I can't. I don't want to be on the opposite side of this where I don't get to enjoy it. Like, I'm in.
He's like, get him out of here. That was just a wonderful sports moment.
That's so good.
That's his career highlight. That will always play.
Did you see his tweet?
No.
He said, well, Thanksgiving's going to be awkward.
That's perfect.
Think too big. We think ourself is one whole thing, and we claim that this collection has a name and is a being. But deep inside, when every cell divides, well, it sets upon the rule that state self-interest is divine. And cancer too lives by this golden rule that you must do unto the others as the others unto you, all for the best, because it's all that life accepts. And so we kill it like a buffalo with awe.
Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I have to get my headset. I don't know what's going on.
All right. Well, it's all good. Yeah. All right. That's it. That gives us a place to switch. So, fucking Cap. I want to talk about Kaepernick.
Okay, cool.
So, for those of you who haven't heard, you want me to fill them in or you want to
do it? Yeah, no, you can do it.
All right. So, for those of you who haven't heard, Kaepernick, who has not played an NFL game for 3 years?
3 years, yeah.
3 years. He announced that the NFL representatives had reached out to him to work out in Atlanta for some teams, and the internet was like, and me included, was like, oh shit, like, is this really happening?
Yeah.
And now there's some reports that the NFL is sort of handling it in a sketchy way, like they didn't notify teams till the last minute, and it's that, like, nobody's gonna really actually send anybody. People will send scouts just to say they went, but that most teams are like, what's going on? Like, we weren't really notified. If they're uncomfortable with the situation. Kind of looks like they're setting it up to fail almost. Like, they're just doing it to say they did it and not actually do it. I don't know. But before that, I was pretty intrigued by it. But I don't know if you were tracking this story. What do you think, Joe? Yeah. How should we be reacting to Kaepernick?
So there's few red, like some more red flags about this whole thing. One, they scheduled it on a Saturday, where if you're going to try somebody out, you would try them out on a Tuesday. Because on Saturday, you're either preparing for a game the next day or you're traveling for that game the next day. So this is a weird way to do it, is on a Saturday. Two, there was my understanding that teams were going to have representatives there, but they weren't going to have any team information on them. So even the scouts who go, they wouldn't show which teams they were affiliated with. Keep it super secret. But the best theory I've seen online is the reason it was on a Saturday is there's a possibility. I've heard two things. It's either Jay-Z asked the league to do this, and they're doing it as a move of good faith with Jay-Z while not trying to help Kaepernick at all. But I've also heard that it's most likely a team that's on their bye week was actually interested in testing out Kaepernick. And this was the only way to do it without your fan base being alerted.
Oh. It could also be both of those, right?
Yes, it could be both.
Because the first thing I thought... actually
interested. It would make sense to be interested because look at who's playing quarterback right now.
All
right,
yeah, no, it's fucking trash city.
Yeah.
All right. Let's unpack these one by one. Let's go to the first one. Let's say that this is Jay-Z's doing. That Jay-Z said, I want Kaepernick. Given that I want him to have a shot, right? And I'll be able to say that we gave him a shot. Good faith effort. How do we feel about two things? One, if that's true, how do we feel about that just on its own? And two, do we have to reassess how we feel about Kaepernick? I'm not Kaepernick, Jay-Z.
No, because the criticism for his deal is what led to this. Not his deal being for this. He made a deal to make the money. He's doing this because him going for the money looked bad. Because if this would have happened a lot sooner, like if he immediately announced Jay-Z has this deal, the only way it makes sense for Kaepernick to have been a part of it is if the tryout happened before the deal was announced. Or immediately after, or during. Right. That's not what happened. This is a long time later after Jay-Z's taken all this heat. Now it starts to materialize, and now it's happening. So now, right before the Super Bowl, where he's going to be in the press a lot because, one, he's in charge of the halftime show, he's going to want to come out in public, and he's going to want people to cheer him again. It's like Kanye doing church music. It's the same shit. This is his Sunday service. If that's the way it's going. So no, he's not off the hook. This is actually worse. Because this should have been a part of the game. You were always about your money. It's still about your money.
Here is how my addendum to that, and I don't disagree, is that this whole thing, like, and this part, I know there's a lot of people who say, and I'm about to be one of them, remember how we started this conversation was about police brutality, not about Kaepernick, not even about anthem protests. It was about police brutality. And in agree, having the NFL players say we're past kneeling ends part of that problem, and it felt like at the moment, like really one of the, it made it feel like even more of a huckster that he was adding that as part of it, right? But now if Kaepernick gets even if Kaepernick gets a like a sort of false chance to come back to the NFL, right? And it doesn't go well, and Jay-Z gives everybody like, oh, well, he tried, it's on him now, right? Even if it's fake. But even if it's not, even if he does make a roster, let's say the opposite happens. He makes a roster, and he plays fine, right? 500 ball where he's not losing games or winning them, right? Like, that's, you know, that's, I think, a reasonable expectation, right? But now, like, that conversation's over. We're not going to talk about police brutality at all anymore.
No, it's done. The racist won. They got us to move what the conversation was about.
Yeah, at the end, Jay-Z helped them.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Unless somehow motherfucking Kaepernick makes it to a Super Bowl. Then we can talk about it again. But I don't know. So, okay, but that begs the second question. Who's on a bye that'd be interested in him? Is there a team that fits that profile?
I believe it was Jacksonville.
Jacksonville, I could totally believe not wanting anyone to know they were courting Colin Kaepernick.
Well, yeah, their owner is a Trump supporter.
Yeah.
Yeah, I can believe that. So bye this week is... Oh, no, sorry, not Jacksonville, Tennessee. Tennessee, makes... Seattle, Giants, and Green Bay are on bye this week. Tennessee, I knew it was one of our division teams. But yeah, Tennessee.
Actually, that one actually makes more sense. Because mm-hmm. Tennessee is, while still in the South, at least it's Nashville, and Nashville's a little more mature.
Yeah, they ain't in Memphis.
They're in Memphis?
No, I said they ain't in Memphis.
No, they ain't in Memphis. Exactly. Yeah. No,
exactly. They ain't in Memphis. So, yeah, that it's one of those two things, or a combination of both.
Yeah, that's interesting. Yeah. Oh, so, what are we cheering for?
I want Colin Kaepernick to get a chance to prove that he can play in the NFL.
Right on. Yeah,
that's
me
it.
Too.
That's all I want. Oh, I mean, that, you know, the end of police brutality. But for him, I want him to get a chance. And if he gets there and he can't play, you know what? He tried. All the races get to be right. Congratulations.
Yeah.
He succeeds. Fuck yeah. Kaepernick deserved to be there. And it's a shame he lost 3 years. But now he's back. And the NFL is more primed for a guy with his particular skill set than it's ever been.
Yeah.
All right. What's next?
All right. So here's what I have written down.
Hold on.
Scorsese.
Okay.
Dr. Sleep. Louis C.K.
What's up with Louis C.K.?
He's on a tour.
Oh.
He's back. It's just started in Virginia.
Oh.
We're having to deal with all this shit again. But I want to bring him. I want to talk about it only because, like, Aziz came back last year, mm-hmm. and I was on record as like welcoming him because I felt like he had paid his dues. Although that's very like, I won't say controversial. I think enough people were like, he paid penance and he seems genuinely repentful. It came off believable. So a lot of people are just cool with him and they're cool with him having back. I don't know if I would say so far as embraced, but certainly, like, one step above tolerated. Like, he's returned. He's allowed back.
His story was a little bit more nuanced.
Nuanced, personal. Yeah. It wasn't a pattern. Yeah. Like, we talked about this last time, right?
Yeah.
Is this one shitty act? We've all done it, right? We've all been shitty to another person.
Yeah.
We found out about yours because you're high profile and a man, and so the attention is to a certain extent is I want to say deserved, but to be expected, right? Mm-hmm. Comes with the territory, right? But there wasn't a pattern of behavior that we know about.
Yeah.
And he seemed genuinely repentful. I thought his comments were thoughtful, and he accepted responsibility. He didn't do any like the sort of like, fine, here's an apology, kind of like Louis C.K. did. But it's still, so with the particulars of their individual transgressions being distinct, for sure. Superficially, perhaps there are lots of commonalities, right? They're both comedians. They're both have television shows. They're both beloved. Both of those felt like betrayals because they also have like being kind of like conscious is a part of both of their acts, right? Mm-hmm. And one has been I'll say welcome back, but make like a lukewarm welcome perhaps. Sort of tepidly, like a probationarily mm-hmm. welcome, right?
Yeah.
Well, Louis C.K., we're not responding that way, or at least I haven't. I don't even know. You heard about it. His tour started, I believe, this week.
I didn't even know until you told me.
Yeah. So what are we? I feel like I want to comment on it. So you guys just now heard about it. So what are your reactions? Is this something we should even? Should we just ignore Louis C.K. or should we comment on this? Like,
he's so outside of my realm of comedy now that I didn't even know he was going on tour. This is normally like 10 years ago. I would have already bought tickets to see this when it comes to my town. You know what I mean?
Right.
I think the big like just I think they are good temples to Aziz and Louis. I think the biggest difference is Aziz still wanted the crowd he had to like him, so he repented to his audience, and I think Louis C.K. has gravitated to his new audience. He's got like because there's always going to be an audience for people.
He's got six shows in Houston.
Okay. Yeah, I'm not gonna go But I think that's really the difference, is that Louis C.K. has embraced his new role in comedy as the outsider, the truth teller, guy who, you know, fuck SJW sort of guy.
Right, right. Yeah,
he's embraced that crowd. And that's right. Who's buying his tickets.
Yeah, and there's the thing, right? And I've been thinking about a lot about, like, Paths to Redemption. And I want to start, like, and I've done this before with, like, when we had the incel episodes, and I want to start in a place of sympathy, start on that side, just to sort of start there as I work through my thoughts and try to have what, like, some one of my colleagues, shout out to him, calls radical empathy. Just do it, even if it's just an intellectual side, see their side of it, right? Or not, maybe not see the side of it, but look for places of overlap with your own experience, right? And I said this as much of Aziz. And like masculinity in our country, in our culture, is often very toxic, right? Particularly in how we relate to women, right? Maybe not so much as we relate to each other, with the exceptions of people that, until it becomes compulsory, right? When you bully people, like, you know, guys, we have a certain macho-ness to our culture. I'm certainly guilty of it. But when you clock someone who's just not into that, you don't push it on them, right? But that's been our mistake. We push it on, and that becomes bullying and pressure, right? We're not tolerant to non-normative forms of masculinity very often, right? Yeah. And it just sort of happens. It happens.
Well, homophobia built into that, too.
Oh, yeah, you're right. Homophobia built into that. A lot of policing of behavior. It, like, masculinity, it has to look a certain way, and you enforce it on people pretty meanly, and it's just not fair, right? It takes a lot. It takes like 30 years of fucking up to see that, right? And I look back at my own life, and I have made a lot of mistakes that I somehow was set up to make. Like, I was like, this is good behavior. This is what I was taught. And now I'm realizing, looking back, like, oh, that was fucked up. You know, I shouldn't have done that or said that or had that attitude. A lot of it is attitude, not so much action, but sometimes attitude becomes action, right? So to a certain extent, I see how, like, maybe with Aziz, the whole, like, man, I didn't even, obviously I see it now, but in the moment, I just wasn't even thinking about that. I was just fucking getting laid, right? And so I get it. That doesn't excuse you, right? No. Right. It not being your fault does not make it not your responsibility. And particularly with men, we have so much cultural power that we bear more responsibility, right? Like, we always want to talk about, with men, we're always all about, like, buck stops here, it's all on me, blah, 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 blah. Well, then fucking take responsibility for this, right? Be honest. Like, this whole thing, like, idea of, like, you can't say the truth thing anymore. We're talking about this last time with comedy, right? Mm-hmm. It's like, well, then fucking be the truth to yourself. Like, this, the truth is that we wield incredible power, and we do it sort of irresponsibly because we don't want to deal with the consequences and find out that we have accidentally, without really deliberately doing it, become shitty people. But you have to. You have to do those reassessments. And I'm not a person that's all about regret. I'm not saying live with your fucking ugliness, right? I'm saying that at a certain point, you can react to the reality that your culture has set you up to fail. You are actually one of the people that benefits most from that culture, so it's like a double loss. Mm-hmm. And that your privilege gets enacted out on the bodies of women way too often, right? Even in casual ways, right? Mm-hmm. It's hard to face that. It's hard to face that about yourself because so often you're like, I was intending to do wrong. I was just fucking trying to get laid, right?
Yeah.
This is what I'm supposed to do, right? Yeah. I get it. But at certain times, you got to just face up with the reality of the situation, and either redefine the term so that you're blameless, which is what happens most of the time, right? B, get resentful because you don't feel you deserve this because you didn't do it on purpose, and then you resent the person who pointed out to you, who's usually a woman, right? And that's how misogyny really happens, right there. You start resenting women. Or C, which is what I tried, or C, don't give a shit, fuck it, right? Yeah. Be a sociopath. Or D, which is what I try to do, is just, like, pay it forward and just try to be better today than you were yesterday, right? Yeah. Just move the needle forward a little bit. Help out somebody else. Use your privilege to help out someone with less of it than you, right?
Yeah.
And as long as you're doing just a little bit, just a little tiny bit, to be better than you were the day before, that means you're always at your best. And if that means you're always at your best, that means you're doing your best and trying your best. And that's all we ask of anybody. And I don't know that I believe that from Louis C.K. I don't believe that. I believe the pattern is broken.
I've never got that from him.
Exactly.
I've never got that from him.
But saying that out loud and realizing that I keep hoping, because I loved Louis C.K., I did. And I just wish he would be better. And he's just constantly disappointing me.
No, it's, for me, I think I've said this on here. For me, my biggest problem with it is that Louis C.K.'s stage persona seems so open and honest. Like, he was truly letting you in.
Right.
When he was not. Which is, you know, it's, nobody really is. It's fucking performative. He's a comedian.
Right.
But he sold you on that so much when this happened. Like, because McGawker had this shit 5 years before it even affected his career. Like, this was always known.
Right.
Well, like, Gawker reported this, like, or maybe Jezebel, one of the Gawker sites, like, had this shit forever ago and, like, openly reported, like, no, this is Louis C.K., denied it for years, and then until it was too late where he couldn't deny it anymore.
Mm-hmm.
You know? It's like, oh, okay, so, like, if you were really honest, like, I think if he would have been honest about it, and, like, the women did not, and he did it in a way where women didn't have a problem with it, of course, he would have been fine. Or yeah. He even just, like he was contrite, like, if he showed any kind of contriteness, like, I'm sorry, like, I shouldn't have done this, he hasn't done that.
Right.
And it hasn't affected his ticket sales. He's going to be successful forever. Like, he's embraced this new audience because he wants to continue his bad behavior is what it feels like.
And the thing, and there it is too, right? Because, like you said, his persona was of being, like, honest and real and seeing things for what they were and telling it like it is, but through a laugh, like, not telling it like it is in a sort of aggressive way, but in a funny way. And one of the big lines he said, you don't get to decide if you're an asshole. We tell you if you're an asshole. Like, that's how it works. Like, you don't get to say you're not an asshole to everyone tell you you're an asshole. Yeah. And then that happened to him, and he's just like, well, I'm sorry. Like, no, come on, man. Like, live up. God, just such a disappointing person.
Yeah.
And it's not about him. It's not about him. It's about the women. But, like, I mean, and I've tried not to, like, make it about him. But at the same time, like, I guess I'm just, you know, all the sour diesel's in me. But fucking. And I've been, I mean, at the point, I opened with butt rot, so might as well go with my heart rot, too. Yeah. Fucking. I just was so disappointed. I'm just so disappointed.
No wonder he liked Woody Allen so much. Oh!
There it is! Oh, feel better.
Don't ask God, just holler at the sky, cause she'll tell it to you plainly. And the clouds that whisper by and praise the shapes, and then praise the way they change. And they'll teach you not to pray to light without you pray to rain. So I pray to hands, I pray to needs, and I pray to blades of grass to find forgiveness in the weeds. But as for health, I just never did believe, and so I never prayed myself except to those. Pray for me.
Oh, all right,
all I got left is Scorsese.
Let's do it.
And all I got is fucking juice for that motherfucker. Fuck Martin Scorsese. I've never liked Martin Scorsese. That overrated hack has been making the same movie since fucking Goodfellas. And before that, he had one other movie that he made two times. Like, that guy has two movies, and they're basically all the same movie. Motherfuckers all like, Marvel movies aren't surprising. Cinema is supposed to shock you. Like, really? Because I'm going to a Martin Scorsese movie. I'm pretty sure I'm going to see some white dude struggling with his masculinity and using violence and breaking the law to somehow recapture it, and I'm supposed to see him as tragic for having to go to these means. Fuck Martin Scorsese and fuck his shitty movies. I've never liked him, and I just feel like now's the time to just be like, I'm all out. I'm 100% out on Martin Scorsese. That's my
record. Well, first, you're on the wrong side of history. Martin Scorsese is an amazing director. He's made at least 4 amazing films.
Name one.
Taxi Driver.
That's a good movie.
King of Comedy. Goodfellas. And The Departed.
Goodfellas and Departed are both trash.
No, man, you're wrong. You're so wrong. But that's fine. It's opinion. I agree with him. I don't think the Marvel movies are cinema, but I think it's a semantical argument because when he's talking about cinema, he's talking about a certain style of film. He didn't say they weren't movies. Like, I think his comments got misconstrued because he just meant they weren't cinema. He meant they didn't give him the same feeling he gets when he watches a Terrence Malick movie, which they're not. They're not those kinds of movies. They're not like his movies, except for Joker, which is just a blatant ripoff of his movies. It's Taxi Driver and King Kong. It's the same fucking movie. I haven't even seen Joker, but the trailer told me enough.
Yeah. And you know what? And like, Todd Phillips didn't have to go to this great lengths to parody Martin Scorsese. Martin Scorsese's been parodying Martin Scorsese for like 30 years.
He does one thing really well, which is he uses the Rolling Stones in movies very, very well. Particularly Gimme Shelter.
Here's the thing. Two things. So here's one thing. I want to agree with you. A premise you said, I want to agree with you. And another thing I want to sort of maybe kind of restate. So this whole idea about they're not cinema, they're a different thing. Personally, I agree. I think that things can be attempts to create art. Things can be attempts to create entertainment. And those things can be parallel. We don't have to put them into a hierarchy, right? And then entertainment whose goal is just to sort of like be feel good and be making us laugh, and it's just like it's just a form of play, right? It's not setting out to be, nor does it need to, right? Like, for example, going for a run doesn't have to be art. It can just be cathartic, right? It can just be alleviating, right? Entertainment can just be like a good burger and fries, and then like, you know, and then you go to like a chic restaurant and they do their fucking chic things there, right? And I like both of those. I'm a foodie, right? Uh-huh. I like your gross ass bar burger and I enjoy a $50 fucking weird piece of meat. Like, I'm on both sides, right? What I don't like is the implicit like high and low culture, like when you fucking plebs aren't going to go see our real movies because you're wasting your money on these Marvel movies. That was a big part of that essay, that no one's coming to see Terrence Malick.
No. It's those movies aren't getting made. It's not nobody's going to see them. It's that because of these movies, these kind of movies don't get made anymore.
I don't believe that. I do not believe that.
No, it's true.
I don't believe it.
Look at comedy. Comedy is dead. When's the last time you saw a $40 million comedy?
What have we ever seen a $40 million comedy? I guess Thor Ragnarok.
Anchorman. No, I'm talking about comedy movies with comedy stars. Those movies are dead. Even Judd Apatow movies are dead.
Those would not fall under Martin Scorsese's definition.
They're not, but I'm talking about comic book movies have killed movies that aren't comic book movies, which is his ultimate grand criticism.
What are we saying by killed? That they don't exist? I don't believe that because there's too many platforms. You can find those movies.
Yes, you get one or two on Netflix. Like, those movies as a thing we got regularly, that's gone. That time is gone. Just look at all the movies. Movies that came out in 2006 and all the movies that came out this year. There were more rom-coms. There were more comedies. There were more mid-level movies that were kind of shitty, but they got budgets. They got bigger budgets. Now all that money only goes to comic book movies. It's all franchise now.
But you're talking about entertainment. Those are other forms of entertainment.
Yeah, that's not. No, I'm talking about what his grand criticism was. He's mad at this thing happening. It's affecting everything.
If that's what he's mad at, then he's not talking about cinema either. If we're talking about that comic movies are dominating the traditional entertainment genres, I agree, right? We don't see big budget comedies. I would go so far as to say comedy's dead. It's just living on the fringes now. But it definitely doesn't have the place of prominence it once had. It has been unseated, and comic book movies are dominating that wing. I agree 100%. What I don't agree with is that somehow that, like, artistic projects like a Paul Thomas Anderson, like who he names, or Terrence Malick or Kathryn Bigelow, doesn't get made. They get made plenty. They just don't have the same cultural visibility
But that's also more his point. The next Paul Thomas Anderson is not going to get a chance. Paul Thomas Anderson has established his name. The next great filmmakers aren't getting this chance. They make a superhero movie and then they get a chance. You know, like, look at fucking Rian Johnson. he had to make a Star Wars movie before he could make his next project where he got money to do it. Or Nolan, like, this is the only outlet you have now is to do comic book movies, and then maybe you'll get to make the movie you want after it.
Man, well, first of all, if that's true, that also undercuts your point, because that makes them vital, right? If making a comic movie first means that you can now make Knives Out, then I don't see where the problem is, other than it just happens later. Like, what's the big deal with having to make a superhero
movie? Then Disney is now the gatekeeper on who gets to make movies going forward.
Maybe. I guess I can see that. Scorsese's not making that point. Scorsese's not making that point. He's got an old man on a rake. That you are making that point, and it's an interesting one.
I think when I read it, that's the point I got. His frustration is rooted in that frustration. He sees it on a different level because he is this type of filmmaker, and he's an old guy. He wants to pop shit on the new thing. Like,
and he also I think a lot of this too, in that same vein, is access to traditional media. I think that, I mean, Netflix and Amazon Prime and Hulu churn out movies. And Netflix turns out good movies, like Oscar-level stuff. I think because they're not coming out in the movie theater, and he's lamenting this sort of, like, community culture that is dominated by the superheroes, which is true. The movie house is for sure. That is true. But I think the reality of streaming is the obvious counter argument to this.
See, I think the bigger thing is the money. Netflix is paying him a lot of money, but sort of if you think about this golden age of movies, which is probably 1969 and 1978, the best era, like when movies became movies, when cinema, the era he longs for, what he truly longs for. Where the best directors were given a blank check to do whatever they wanted is what he's longing for. And
is that really true? That mythology that, like, directors were given a blank check to do whatever they wanted? Like, this, a lot of that golden age cinema was like 50s and 60s.
No, like, I'm talking about the greatest, like, The Godfather. I'm talking about the Coppola, Scorsese, Kubrick, like all these guys. Like,
are you thinking the 70s era?
That's what I'm talking about, the golden age of movies. Like, that's the golden age of movies.
Well, the golden age of Hollywood is the 50s. That's what they always call it.
Yeah, but I'm talking about when movies hit their prime. The best era of cinema is that era.
Gotcha. I was thinking 20 years before that. My bad.
No, but he's that doesn't happen anymore. That died in the 80s. Star Wars kind of killed it. Franchise, like, and this is sort of the bastardization this came from that. This is the end of that process where that era of cinema is dead, but we also still got those mid-level movies. Those are gone. Disney's kind of killed that. They killed the middle movie. Your movie has to make $1 billion. It can't make $100 million. It can't make $40 million. Those movies are dead. Even Netflix, they're not paying as much for movies. You're not going to pay $5 million to Kevin Smith to make a movie that's going to cost $40 million. I'm not saying Kevin Smith's a great filmmaker. I'm just saying those kind of movies used to happen a lot, and that's how we found a lot of new stars. That's how we found a lot of new talent. Those movies are kind of dead. Now it's a $1 million movie, but even that $1 million movie is still going to the same people. It's going to the people who do, I forget their names, they do the mumblecore movies or whatever. They do a lot of Netflix projects. They do a lot of TVs for HBO. It's the same people. The pipeline is shrinking now because of these movies. It's a greater threat to the art of cinema, I think, is ultimately what he's trying to say. But I could just be putting a lot of my problems with what's going on with movies on top of what he said.
It's a little bit of both, probably.
Yeah.
But I guess I just don't agree. I guess I just don't agree. I think that if we're defining the movies, like I said earlier, as going to the movies and seeing these movies, like, you're right there. There's not much variety. Like, even me and my wife have been like, man, it's just, it's all, it's not just that the franchise has killed movies. I think that the franchises represent genres, and I think genre flicks are sort of like killing movies because genre flicks are really commodifiable. Because, I mean, there's always plenty of, like, other things, like, but they're all pretty... they're lower budget, which I don't really give a shit about that. Most of the budget comes from just the actors anyway. And when you look at like classics from the past, they had lower budgets because a lot of those movie actors weren't made yet. But that's beside the point. You do see lots of genre movies that you don't see many, like, with the, except for the occasional, like, Eighth Grade or Lady Bird. You don't see these, like, oh, an unusual thing, right? Mm-hmm. I'll give you that. Granted. I do think plenty of those movies do come out. They come out to lower runs and they can sort of run because there's just, the Oscars are still a thing and they want to win those Oscars. I think, too, a lot of this thing that, that energy he's talking about, which is always true, lives on the indie circuit, not in the popular circuit, right? And I think that's still true. It's like, I still go see indie movies at indie theaters, but those are not, those have never been a huge thing, right? Not since our lifetime, they're not now. So, granted on that front, right? What I don't buy is the idea that these movies don't get made. They just don't get made there. They're getting made other places. People are still creative, and there's more access to just making things on YouTube, on Netflix, on Hulu, on Crackle, all these different platforms. I think they're harder to find, and they're hidden from our sight because these big genre franchises are dominating culture. And the way that's true, they're hiding it from us, and they're not going to make the sort of generate the revenue. And there's a part of me who's like, oh, you should do it for the fucking fun of it. Fuck that. You're an artist. You deserve to get paid, right? So that's troublesome. So I don't disagree 100%. What I don't agree is that these things just don't get made. Only because I feel the only evidence that's ever offered to me is that I don't know of them, so they must not. And the reason we don't know about them is because they don't come out in the place they used to. I could come off of this if there was some sort of like, oh, let's start comparing lists of movies, but there's so much more things now, especially with television. Like, cinema isn't only a movie in a theater, right? There's so many things that I feel that it's harder to identify brilliance. Like, it's harder to identify Paul Thomas Anderson because of the noise. One, the loud noise this one object is making over here, and then all the different noise that's happening over here. So I can see that, but I guess I just, I don't know, like, art doesn't stop. Art doesn't like that. Like, I don't buy that fundamental premise of it.
You don't buy the premise at all.
No, I really don't.
Yeah, you don't. I mean,
I don't. Except for the one exception I said, that, like, in terms of, like, classic cinema, we're talking about the movie theaters, going to the movies we're having national conversations about, I agree. But I think art will always find a way.
I think Disney is slowly killing movies. I think everything Disney's done in the past 4 years has been ultimately bad for consumers and people who like movies.
You know what? There's a way for us to have our cake and eat it too. Because, like, I read comics, and comics have been dying forever, right? Mm-hmm. And I sometimes think, like, that the movie might kill the comic book eventually. The superhero comic. Because the superhero comic is actually slowly dying, the indie comic world is fucking alive and amazing. Like, the indie comic world is doing so good right now. But the superhero world is slow, has been dying a slow death for like 20 years, right? It has now found life in the movies. Mm-hmm. So part of me is like, as long as superheroes exist because they give me joy, do I really care if they happen in comics or TV or in movies as long as I can have them? And I kind of don't. I'll miss having them in comics because one day that's going to happen. Because I love comics more than most things. But that's fine. The stories will continue. But if he loves a particular medium, like, maybe he's right. Maybe the reason I don't believe that this is such a big thing to be worried about is because the delivery system of narrative, of stories, of art, for me, can be anything. And he's pretty allegiant to this one version, which, to be fair, is one that has been central to our culture for so long and means a lot to us. So we shouldn't just walk past his demise just because I believe in storytelling. But at the same time, I do believe in storytelling, so I'm just
going. But okay, are the Marvel movies good storytelling?
Some of them are. Some of them are just pop, lazy, entertaining.
I think most of them are.
Most of them are what?
Lazy, like not essential viewing.
If essential viewing is defined by the, I guess, intelligence of the storytelling.
No, I'm talking about, like, does it open your mind in any kind of way?
Right. They're all designed to be entertainment, right? Mm-hmm. So do any of them transcend entertainment to be art? Like, kind of like, can art transcend? Art is just like, to go to the other side, art's not supposed to be entertaining. It's just supposed to be thought-provoking, right?
Yeah.
You're not supposed to sort of feel good. You're supposed to just have thoughts, right? Yeah. But sometimes it can transcend itself and be entertaining, too. It can make you feel good as well, right? Do any of the Marvel movies transcend... Oh, wait, Marvel or superheroes?
Yeah, I think it's pretty clear he's talking about Marvel.
All right, so Marvel transcend their genres to be like, whoa, thinking about things in a different way, or I'm touched in some way. No, actually, probably not. I think they are the pinnacle of entertainment. I don't know if any of them transcend to be art. Some superhero movies have.
Yes, some have.
Right. Like, I think Spider-Verse and Logan both have. Spider-Verse for its aesthetics and Logan for just the power of its narrative. I think they both transcend entertainment and they reach the level or they cross over to art. I don't want to say reach the level because it's still hierarchical. Break out of its boundaries to art.
Yeah.
No, I don't think any of the Marvel movies do.
Yeah.
But like we said, they're not intending to.
No, I know. They're just intended to make Disney money. But, I mean, there's a lot of commercial art. You know, there's a lot of commercial art that's really good. Like, fucking half of Picasso's... I mean, all of Picasso's life was fucking just, here's something, give me money.
Yeah, no, I mean, there's nothing wrong with being... There's nothing wrong with being commercial and being art. There's nothing wrong with selling art and making your money off of art.
Exactly.
The problem becomes when you're just what you're doing is commodifying something and calling it art to reach some sort of status or pretension, and you therefore undermine what art is supposed to do. Art's supposed to be thought provoking, right? That's what its job is to make us think or break us out of our old habits of mind. Mm-hmm. Like, imagine the world in new ways. Like you said, open your mind. That's what art's supposed to do.
Yeah.
There's no obligation for you to enjoy that process or be good. Like, it just has to help you reach profundity. Well, entertainment is just supposed to make you feel joy.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
I say that Marvel movies offer me tremendous amount of joy. Mm-hmm. I also have a heavy art diet in my life already because I'm just, like, a big reader and a big museum goer, so... I don't feel that sort of like one part of me is not getting fed.
Yeah.
I'll be honest, if I can be real about myself, if it wasn't Scorsese saying it, who I think is a hack, I'd have probably been more amenable to hold this whole line thing. I probably would have.
I will say this. I think we should look at Marvel movies, our Marvel movies art thing, the way I look at video games.
Okay.
Are video games art? Not necessarily. But within that video game is art. Like, so like when you look at a Marvel movie, you're seeing some of the greatest animation we've ever done as a species. Like that art. That's art. See, like when the animation, like pieces of it is art. But as a whole, it's entertainment.
I love this point. I hadn't thought about this until you said it. I love this point because that whole sort of like PTA, like, we won't see the next PTA, won't find him, unless that person just does something else because they don't try that. And I think we're going to see them come into video games. Some video games, like, they're entertainment. That's their purpose, right? Mm-hmm. At least the purpose of the medium. Again, we got to talk about medium versus intent versus individual object. It's intended to entertain, right? But that's plenty of video games that transcend that to sort of, like, touch me, that have, like, hit me poignantly. Right. Mm-hmm. Even talking about superheroes, I felt that way about Spider-Man. Like, I thought that game's narrative was like, it felt things in a real way. Like, I was like, it made me think. Like, I was like, dang, like, what would I do? And like, it's sort of like it provoked thoughts. It wasn't setting out to do that. It was setting out to entertain me, but it managed to be to lean into art, right, in a way none of the Marvel movies ever have. Right. Yeah. So I think that video games are a real interesting thing to track because some of that siphoning must already be happening.
There's been some really great artful video games. I think Undertale is one. I think
I'm playing that now.
Are you playing it? It's a great game. How are you killing or saving?
You're killing everything.
You're killing everything?
I try to save them and then they attack me.
Oh man, okay. Yeah, okay. Let me know how that goes.
Oh really? Maybe
let me know how that goes. You'll probably play it again.
Maybe I'll start saving.
No, it's too late now. You've already killed. You got blood on your hands. You got to kill everything from here on out.
All right. Well, they only came kill. Out. They came at me, Joe.
Yeah, I know.
They only came kill. At me.
Only kill, because I've only done the pacifist playthrough, where yeah. I don't kill anything.
Okay.
So, well, when you beat it that way, we can talk about it.
Deal.
Yeah. We're
pinning it. We're pinning it. Yeah. I did just beat Untitled Goose Game, too.
Oh, really? I haven't played that one yet.
That one is weird because that one refuses to be either art or entertainment, and it's somehow a little bit of both. That's a weirdo. That's a weird one. But yeah. but think of a game like Journey. That one's setting out to create art, right? Abzu, same thing. Although Abzu is not as good. Yeah. Same director.
Yeah.
That's a medium that is one contributing this in a way that Scorsese would never see,
mm-hmm.
and two. Exciting because like there's a whole new platform for telling of story for narrative that's like tell me if I'm wrong, I left back games back years ago, you know that I came back, and the thing I'm seeing is like the storytelling has matured to an incredible degree, like I don't say in terms of whether it being art or entertainment, just like the things they're trying, the commitment to story, the sort of like uniqueness of story, like it's that element. This wasn't even really present back in PlayStation 2. Games had context, and sometimes they had quote unquote stories, but there's a difference between having a story and telling me the story.
Yeah. I think a lot of it was hardware limitations for one, like yeah, back then.
For
like
sure.
We can do so much more now, but I also think there's been a push for that because if you've been playing video games since the first Nintendo came out, we've had these epic games, but less the epic story to go with it.
Right.
We've just been able to catch up now.
Right.
And so now I think storytelling is better and some gameplay is kind of worse now.
It's got, you know, the what's it called? The open world game has just become the 2D platformer of our time.
It really has. It really yeah. has. And I also think that video games as a medium, which is, man, this took a weird turn. Video games as a medium relies on movie cues too much.
Yeah.
I think they need to play into their art as a video game.
Yes,
and not just try to show me a movie.
Which is why Untitled Goose Game is weirdly one of the best narrative experiences I've had, because it's totally taking advantage of what video games do.
Mm-hmm.
There's no words at all. It's completely a visual narrative with just sounds and like buzzes and colors. Like
yeah.
it's almost like a comic book.
Okay.
But it's a video game, so it can do things a comic book can't, like pans, like control the camera,
yeah.
look here instead of there. So there's this, it's like it's borrowing from the comic book, but it isn't just like a translated comic book. It's becoming its own thing. And it's a continual, like there's no levels, there's no prompting. It's just like, here's how the buttons work, go figure out. And like you just have a list of tasks and you don't know why you're doing these tasks. You're just kind of a rude ass jerk duck or goose.
Yeah.
And you find out at the end there's this like this sort of narrative that's been happening the whole time, but it's pretty like low stakes. It's like a little, just enough narrative to give context to what you've been doing this entire time.
Mm-hmm.
But the telling me of it was so unlike anything I've experienced and having been told a story, that it was like what you just said. Only a video game could really do this story.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's good. I'm glad there's more games like that.
And it wasn't trying. It wasn't setting out to do that. It was setting out to be kind of rando, indie, kind of goofy game, right? Entertaining in a different way, right? That's sort of like, kind of like a tickle you sort of intellectually kind of mm-hmm. entertaining, but still designed to be entertaining. It's not designed to be thought-provoking.
Yeah.
But it transcended itself in the sense that it was just like, I can say this, like I've never had a story told to me this way. This is just, it was great. And it was just a goose. I won't tell you the spoiler.
Okay, don't tell me.
But it's just a goose going about his day. It's just phenomenal.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's awesome. Well, all right. What we got? Is that it?
Yeah, he picked a weird time to flex. Like, there hasn't been one of those in months.
No,
the one we had is a copy of you. Like, what are you?
Yeah.
What are you doing?
Yeah, maybe that's really what set him off. It's like, now they're just copying me too. Like, fuck you. Maybe
yeah.
That's really
if
what
anyone's
set him
gonna
off.
Copy me, it's gonna be me.
Yeah. All right. I'm out.
All right, homie.
Later, man.
The story goes, or the way that I was told, there was a king that always fell too high, and then he fell too low, and so he called all the wise men to the hall, and he begged them for a gift to end the rises and the falls. But here's the thing, they came back with a ring. It was simple and was plainly unbefitting of a king, engraved in black. Well, it had no front or back, but there were words around the band that said, just know this too shall pass.